save the king.
Hello and welcome back to Pod Save the King. It's been quite a frantic week of royal news. I mean, I don't know how many times we've said that, Russell Myers. It's your host, Anne Gripper, back once again to navigate through, well, a varied week of royal updates. Sad things, important political things, ongoing sort of wrangle things. Prince Harry's had the update on his security court case. Or the latest update, because he's planning to appeal it. William has continued his engagement with sort of the Israel-Gaza situation with a visit today. We've had Alina Zelenska visiting the Queen. I mean, Russell, it's a busy week.
Hasn't it? Just good afternoon. Well, yeah, it's been a busy one. It's had a bit of everything, hasn't it? We've had sort of memorial services, we've had meetings with politicians, and we've had the First Lady of Ukraine over. Prince William, as you say, continuing his Middle East mission with a visit to a synagogue in London today, and the sort of bombshell news that Harry has lost his court case against the British government. So where does that leave him? I imagine it isn't the end of this long-running saga, and we'll be talking about it for quite a while to come.
So lots to look forward to in the show, but we're going to start with the latest news. So we're recording this at Thursday lunchtime, and understandably, the news of Prince William's visit to a synagogue was embargoed because of the rise in anti-Semitism and challenges around synagogues and things that have been seen in the UK and in various other places as well, particularly since the incidents back in October and the aftermath of that with what's been happening in Gaza. But William, when we talked about his statement last week, and there was a poll that backed his intervening on it, our listeners largely backed him as well. We'll share some comments a bit later on. I mean, some people wanted him to go further in terms of denouncing anti-Semitism, and some people feeling it was a bit late to get involved and despairing a bit about whether anything would make a difference. But I mean, William, it's clear he does want to make a difference, and that's part of his reason for visiting a synagogue today.
Well, it is. I mean, we know about his statement last week, he calling for immediate action in the Israel-Gaza war, which incidentally he was backed overwhelmingly. I think after his statement, which he said that too many had been killed in the conflict. He, like so many others, wanted to see an end to the fighting as soon as possible, stopping short of calling for a ceasefire. But I think you really are getting into the realms of political commentary once we start discussing that. Again, discussing the desperate need for humanitarian support in Gaza, and definitely saying that it's critical that the hostages get released. Now, after he made that speech, which was, I think, pretty bombastic for a future king to make those that sort of statement. He was backed, I don't know if we covered this before, but backed overwhelmingly by Brits in a YouGov poll, who said that they really appreciated the comments. They thought it was appropriate for him to make that. I think, let me see, the 47% said it was appropriate, rather than 24% who answered that it was inappropriate. And I think that we often call on questions, don't we, the role of the royal family and what they're there for. Certainly we've seen Prince William move into this greater statesman-like role over the last few years, and certainly his interest in Israel and the Middle East has been well documented since he went there in 2018. And then I think I mentioned this last time, that I remember being there with his senior aides and them saying that this isn't just something, we created a trip out of nothing. It's something that he has a deep interest in. He definitely wants to follow it throughout his life, pretty much. I mean, such a huge, huge issue. He feels that though he can use his platform to make a difference, and it was no different with this trip to the Western Marble Arch Synagogue in London today, and talking to not only sort of young ambassadors of the Holocaust Memorial Trust, but Holocaust survivors themselves. And I think that when you're discussing such an issue as this on the backdrop of his statement and the ongoing conflict, it's something that he should be applauded for. And I think that it's interesting to see that most people are backing him.
Yeah, it was our question of the week last week, asking listeners what they thought of his intervention, and some really interesting comments coming back. So thank you to everybody who did get in touch. Gillian saying he was just stating hope for peace, fine by me. It'll make no difference though. Emily Arwer saying he absolutely can make a difference, and more people in his position should try. Kate says he is bringing attention to a crisis. Good on him for caring. Haters and naysayers, i.e., politicians, obviously aren't doing enough. Alison, bit more skeptical. No, he seems lazy and surface level. Quite harsh, maybe. Kim Gosling says Prince brackets King Charles skated close to the line at times. Good on William for speaking up. Jane Bredin saying it was very balanced and reminded me of his compassionate mother. Jonathan Lansana says totally appropriate. Some things are too important to worry about who you may upset. Full neutrality not plausible in the 21st century. He also just reiterated the government line. A really interesting message from Rolene, who says, "Hi guys, excellent podcast. Always a great way to start a message. Thank you, Rolene. I wanted to comment about Prince William. Speaking as an Israeli citizen, his comments made front page news and were warmly welcomed. Yes, our policy is fighting stops when our hostages are released and Hamas surrenders, but we all want to see an end to it. We all want to see our neighbours get more aid. Contrary to what people think, Israelis are devastated to see the suffering. Prince William did something many have forgotten to do. He expressed empathy for both sides, did not tell either Israel what to do, and most important, called the release for the release of our hostages. He did not use the word ceasefire. We thought he is a mensch and more leaders should follow his example." So thanks, Rolene, for getting in touch with your thoughts. And Emma says, on a slightly different angle, "I'd like to know what is important to him, who he is, what kind of person he is or king he will be. In the same way we know who the king is and what he thinks of certain issues, because he spoke out as Prince of Wales. William should do the same. This doesn't mean he has to do so once king. And let's be frank, we don't know how soon that may happen now. So the more we hear his voice, the better, in my opinion." Russell, what do you think of William? What is his character and how is he building his role as Prince of Wales as he does, project into the future that he will one day become king?
Well, I think at the British Red Cross headquarters engagement that he did last week, he said it himself. He said he was distressed as a father, and I think that he is a lot of things that he and Catherine do are very, very centered to family life and how they make them feel. So, kids' education or their development, the environment, climate change. What sort of world are they trying to shape, not only for their children but for the next generation? And what sort of world do they want left behind? And that's something that the king has said time and time again. What world are we leaving for our children, our grandchildren, our great-grandchildren? We have to try and affect generational change. I think that when you bring that back to duty and what the role of senior members of the royal family should be, it is, as I and I do agree with Prince William, it isn't just turning up to do the sort of the handshaking and the opening of the hospital ward, although that is very important and that is an integral role, I have always argued, of members of the royal family. But there are huge, huge issues that they are trying to tackle, and certainly the king has done that with climate change. You're looking at what Camilla has been doing in the domestic violence field. These are conversations which weren't happening, we could say decades ago, but certainly a member of the royal family speaking about domestic violence wasn't happening really until Camilla broached it. And so to make the big changes, I think you need to try and put your neck out a little bit. And so William is not afraid of doing that. He's entering, the tinderbox that is the Middle East. And he's very knowledgeable. He's got good people behind him. They brought David Hunt in, who's a very, very senior diplomat, works in the Foreign Office for years. He's being able to advise him on these matters. So he's not walking into it blind. And I think that bringing you back to the story that I had many years ago, that has rung true hugely over the last couple of weeks about William sees this as, in quote, a life's mission, a life's work. And it's something that he feels he will be able to use his profile for good. So good on him. I mean, if he was standing back, like a lot of celebrities have been criticized in recent months for not saying anything, then surely he would be open to criticism. So he's going to get criticized in all quarters, whatever he does, isn't he? I do feel for him in that sense. But I think good on him for making a stand.
I think it's interesting that point about, how possible is it not to have opinions in the 21st century when everybody has always got a hot take on Twitter, but this is not a helpful place to have a hot take. So the measured approach that William is taking seems to be a good thing. And you, I mean, you talked about him being talking about things through emotions and how it makes him feel? Do you think that's a sort of a generational difference between him and Charles, or a personal difference? You know, William and Catherine, and talking about feelings and emotions and mental health, and you know, our generation being a bit more touchy-feely and more willing to, I don't know, cry in public or whatever it happens to be.
Yeah, it certainly opens up the appeal of the royal family to a younger generation, doesn't it? Being able to talk about your feelings, being able to talk about the major issues that are happening in the world that I think affect a lot of young people, whether that is war. I mean, all these have knock-on effects of people's day-to-day life, don't they? Where it's war on mental health that kicks on to your standard of living, how your family may be suffering, whether you've got family abroad or here. There are such a multitude of issues that I think come into the way that we feel about them, and certainly William and Kate have tried to convey that in a fashion that brings people with them on the journey. So whether it is climate change, so do you feel that you are affected by these issues? Well, this is how you can get involved, and we should be having those conversations. We should be able to, like you said today, speak out against the rise of anti-Semitism. And by just him saying it, that may transform into other people thinking, well, is there a rise? I hadn't realized there was a rise. Well, if they're addressing it, then maybe I should look into it further. And maybe if I do see racism, anti-Semitism, bullying, people affected for the mental health, then I should try and make a stand and do something about it.
And obviously, William is back at work today. He was due to be attending a memorial service earlier in the week and then pulled out at relatively short notice due to a personal matter. And we understand, you know, there was also a sort of an update issued by the palace that Kate's progress continues well, i.e., it's nothing related to any issue with Kate. And then obviously there was also the sad news later in the day of the death of Thomas Kingston, the husband of Lady Gabriella. I mean, I remember covering their wedding. I was working that weekend shift, and beautiful pictures. You know, everyone loves any wedding, but a royal related wedding as well. You know, it was a happy day and a lovely time, and such sort of sad and shocking news. And only 45. But it isn't thought that Prince William's absence was related to that either. So.
No, I decided to just clear up a few things because it was very, very muddled on that day. First of all, we had very short notice that Prince William was pulling out of the memorial service for King Constantine, the late King of Greece, also his godfather. William was due to be doing a reading at St George's Chapel. So, you know, the fact that the palace said personal reasons, they don't often say that. You know, if he was feeling unwell, I think they possibly would have said. Now, let me clear this issue up, because whilst they didn't go into further confirmation or clarification whether it was to do with the Princess of Wales, they did, as a sort of side note, say she continues to be doing well. So whilst we don't specifically know whether his absence was due to Kate having to go to a hospital appointment, whether she wasn't feeling well, I mean, gosh, those of us who've got children know that most kids are pretty sick at the moment. It could have been one of his kids was ill. He had to take some time off. The nanny wasn't available. Maybe she was. I mean, it could have been a multitude of reasons. So the very fact that they said personal reasons, it doesn't stop the rumor mill from exploding. And we've seen this recently with the sort of chatter on social media about where is Kate? What is wrong with her? We haven't seen her for so long. I mean, that has gone into absolute overdrive. And I think that, you know, William and Kate, we talk about them being public figures. We talk about them potentially doing more, or what are they doing with certain issues, and they are afforded, or should be afforded, a right to privacy at certain junctures, and I think we should all recognise that. And that definitely goes for Prince William saying he had personal reasons. Like I just said, it could have been one of his children that don't want to get into. And certainly, the Princess of Wales deserves the right to have her privacy respected after undergoing medical treatment. I don't think the palace would have given, or would have wanted to give, an update. They certainly haven't said, or they've said that they don't want to get involved in a running commentary. But that was caught kind of, I think they probably thought people would start wondering whether it was to do with Kate. So by not saying it is or it isn't, but by saying that she's still doing well, it kind of, you know, sort of moves it on a little bit, or just enough. So, but listen, he's back at work today. He's due at an engagement on Friday as well, which will be very interesting, which is embargoed, so I can't tell you about it. But there's certainly a lot in his diary over the next few weeks.
Yeah, certainly there's definitely kind of an appetite from royal fans that difficult to know whether they just miss Kate or whether actually it's worrying them. I don't know. So there was a message from a listener. Hello from Mississippi. I haven't messaged in a minute, but wanted to inquire, like so many others, I'm sure, as to why you all think the Princess of Wales hasn't released a single personal statement or any update of her own. I believe KP did write after she left hospital, but it's been almost 2 months. 2 months! This is the same person who, after pushing out each baby, was standing outside the Lido wing for a photo shoot made up to the hilt. And we all know what one feels like 6 to 12 hours after birth. I mean, Russell, you probably don't know quite what it feels like, although you have the dad's perspective, clearly. Not asking for gossip or speculation of her surgery, but more interested in how the palace is handling this. I'd say rather poorly. I don't know. Like you say, it's difficult to get that balance because there's kind of nothing to update on, and we don't know what the issue is. They don't want us to know what the issue is, and it is her personal private health matter, which is an area which, however public a figure you are, does come still with protection, unless to a certain extent you're the President of the United States, where they have their annual medical checks and that all gets published in some way, shape or form. But yeah, I don't know. I think people do miss her. I miss her. I miss having Kate to talk about, and I hope she's getting on well with her recovery, and I'm really looking forward to when she is well enough to be back up and out and about. But I think, you know, to your point, they don't want to do the running commentary, and as soon as you do one thing, and it goes back a bit to when we were talking about Camilla's diary not necessarily being confirmed, and the panic that then comes if she pulls out or something, whereas it better being just to pop up. If you start doing something, then there becomes an appetite for it, and if you don't do it, then the people freak out about it. So everybody on Twitter and everybody else, calm down, be patient. It's the things about the rolling news cycle. Probably if it was the olden times and they were setting sail to get down to Australia for royal tour, they probably wouldn't even still have got there yet or something. So it'd still be, we just operate at a different pace these days. Sticking with the international relations theme, Russell, a nice meeting today between the Queen, Camilla, and the First Lady of Ukraine, as you mentioned. And I mean, the royal family have been really involved on an ongoing basis and regularly sort of sharing messages of support or doing visits to things with troops, sometimes getting their camouflage and all of that kind of thing. Charles sent a very, you know, sort of quite long and Charles R. signed off message last week on the anniversary of the invasion, you know, as it's sort of one of his key interventions from his recuperation. But a nice meeting today.
Yes, it was. I mean, we didn't know about it ahead of schedule, but such is the nature of these sort of closely guarded engagements. And the Queen was meeting the First Lady of Ukraine, Olena Zelenska. This took place at Clarence House. There wasn't any journalists involved, but we did see some pictures. But I've spoken to someone at the palace and said, you know, what was the sort of flavor of the conversation? And certainly do know that Mrs. Zelenska thanked the king thanked the king for his message of support to Ukraine on the second anniversary of the conflict, which has, you know, gone incredibly quickly and was sort of marked across the board, really, I think, and in a level of sort of distress more than hope, the fact that it's still ongoing. And it was interesting that the Queen, I was told, shared. How the UK is all thinking of Ukraine on that sort of unfortunate and pretty grim milestone, right? So they both spoke about the attendance of Ms. Zelenska at the late Queen's funeral and the coronation. And they discussed the impact that the conflict is having on women and children in Ukraine, and talking about those physical, mental scars that they're enduring, and how possibly the UK can assist them. It's interesting that Mrs. Zelenska went to Downing Street to meet Ashkata Murphy as well. And I think Murty, rather. I think that's interesting show of support, not only for the royal family, but the government, which is... It's a pretty interesting time for Ukraine because of what's happening in the States and whether they're going to get a new president in a few months and whether that level of support will be pulled from under them. But I'm sure they're all hoping and waiting patiently to see what happens.
It was pretty powerful words from the king last week. There's his true valor in the face of indescribable aggression. And I guess instead of saying keep on UK politics supporting them, I continue to be greatly encouraged that the United Kingdom and our allies remain at the forefront of international efforts to support Ukraine at this time of such great suffering and need. My heart goes out to all those affected as I remember them in my thoughts and prayers. Because I had been thinking originally when I saw the pictures, oh, you know, this it's a shame Charles would surely have wanted to meet Mrs. Zelenska because the Ukraine is such a big thing and he's put this statement out, but obviously he, you know, sort of retires to the countryside for the weekend after he's had his cancer treatment to, you know, enjoy the fresh air and seclusion and peace and quiet rather than the hustle and bustle of central London. But then actually this is the meeting of, you know, the two wives, if you like, and actually it's quite natural for him not to be there. So you're talking about her meeting Mrs. Sunak, Ashgata Murthy, at Downing Street. It's the same vibe. I don't know, what do you think? Would Charles
Yeah,
have met
no.
her otherwise?
He may have done because I think that she wanted to thank him for his message and of continued support, marking that milestone. However, I do think that's a really interesting dynamic of getting Mrs. Zelenska in a room with Camilla and Mrs. Murty, because I think Mrs. Sunak I guess, and so you have a different set of scenarios that you have the king obviously not here at the moment. I'm sure Rishi Sunak's got an awful lot to do with the government's support, continued support with Ukraine, and so by the two women meeting, it gives a different dynamic, and I think that that's quite welcome.
And it was not long after we recorded last week. The King met the Prime Minister, and there's a nice video coming out, and Charles being up to a little joke about how well he's looking so well because of the mirrors and all tricks, all mirrors, and talking about the cards and the message that he sent, bringing him to tears, and then the Prime Minister somewhat awkwardly keeping repeatedly saying, you know, it's good to see you doing so well, and not feeling he came across as slightly less comfortable with the whole exchange and just kept saying the same thing. And then lovely pictures and video that came out a bit later, a couple of days later, of the King's mailbag, essentially. I mean, you've got to love King Charles. At least you don't have to wear a cone with a picture of the dog recovering from whatever treatment he'd had. But it's a, I don't know, nice and I don't know, uplifting and hopeful. And it's a lot of mail for the royal household to be dealing with, but that's something that they're pretty well used to, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, again, you're talking about the king has gone a very, very different way to the Princess of Wales, hasn't he? I mean, he's been giving regular updates. We've had messages. We've seen him driving or being driven in the state Bentley because it's got the windows, waving to the crowds, then taking part in a video. I mean, he obviously feels well enough in himself to do those sorts of things and meeting the Prime Minister. He did meet him yesterday, but there wasn't journalists present. It was a private audience. And I think that that's something that he is carrying on from his mother's mantra, right? Being seen to be believed. But that doesn't take away from the fact that we should respect Kate wanting to guard her privacy. It's a private medical matter, and she's obviously had a lot to deal with, major surgery, and taking that period of time to rest and recuperate. Again, even by saying that, it's unfortunate that they've kind of put a date on it, because by saying she's going to be back by Easter, I mean, if she needs a couple more weeks, or she's not back, I think they've said after Easter, so she's not pictured with the royal family walking to church during Easter services. But if she isn't back soon enough after that, then the rumour mill will start again, won't it? And I'm sure they are quite conscious of that.
And in the meantime, the Queen obviously continues to lead the line at the memorial service the other day. And I mean, the 500 words award ceremony and things, that looked like a really fun event last night.
Yes, yeah, certainly. And it's interesting that Camilla is doing such an array of jobs at the moment. No, I mean, she's front and center of the royal family. She's the most senior royal working at the moment. She's the one definitely holding the fort. I mean, William pulling out of this engagement or this memorial service the other day, being absent for a couple of weeks while Kate was in and out of hospital. It doesn't sort of help the sort of continuity that is needed at the moment, I think, with Kate and the king being off. But by doing those sort of stalwart events that she's had such an association with for many, many years, is keeping the royal train on the track, so to speak.
One bit of unwanted continuity. Prince Andrew, he still likes the limelight, doesn't he?
Well, he does. I mean, gosh, if night, as soon as night follows day, you could have bet your house on Prince Andrew putting himself at the front of proceedings. And what I found pretty unsavoury, now this was King Constantine's memorial, and he was leading the royal family walking down the track to St George's Chapel. But yeah, it was for a memorial service. There's members of the royal families throughout Europe and beyond who had flown in for this. It was a pretty big deal. And he's sort of grinning like a Cheshire cat, putting himself to the front of the queue. I just found that a little bit unsavoury. And also with the backdrop of, you know, Thomas Kingston had passed away by this point. He, you know, he was found dead on Sunday. The royal family would have known all about this. Prince and Princess Michael of Kent were attending the memorial service, despite it being their son-in-law. And I just think, you know, there was a distinct lack of class more than anything. And interestingly, that we'd spoken to some of Jeffrey Epstein's victims to say, you know, what were your views on this? And they just said, he just still doesn't get it. And that comes through time and time and time again, that he doesn't understand that his presence at these events, and let's, you know, still say he's denied all wrongdoing and he is permitted to be at these events. It's classed as a family service. It's much like him going to church with the royal family on Christmas Day. It wasn't a state occasion or a proper royal engagement. And yet he doesn't realise that his presence is going to be hugely controversial at these moments. And I think if he had an ounce of self-awareness, he would have done.
Discretion, not the word that is most associated with him.
Yeah.
To our transatlantic branch of the royal family. And Prince Harry, we've had a couple of video sort of appearances from him at a couple of different awards this week. But the main thing has been not culmination as it transpires, but the latest stage of his fight to get security in the UK and sort of the review of the decision to downgrade the security that he gets. Talk us through the decision, what happened, what happens next, and I guess some of the things that we learned, because there was a lot of, you know, evidence and documentation and paperwork submitted to try and convince the courts of his case, essentially.
Well, it is a bitter blow for Harry, because I don't think it's the end of this saga. I mean, it's had more twists and turns than an episode of Succession, hasn't it? But the issue for Harry is whether he does go to the Court of Appeal now, which we understand that he absolutely will do. But it's already cost the British taxpayer £1 million there or thereabouts. One would imagine his legal bills are absolutely huge as well. He's not afraid of the litigation. We know that. But when you look at the detail, as I have, you know, for more time than I care to even think about now. But you just need to look at the instances where Harry has come back recently. The Queen's Platinum, late Queen's Platinum Jubilee, where Harry and the kids came as well. Incidentally, the last time, or first and last time, King Charles was able to meet his granddaughter, which is very, very sad. The fact that Harry came over for the King's coronation, he came over a couple of weeks ago to see his father after his cancer diagnosis. At each of those moments, Harry was afforded the taxpayer-funded protection that he so desperately craves. What Ravec, the body under the jurisdiction of the Home Office, is asking for is 28 days notice. So you can't get on a plane and come over for a jolly because you are not a working royal. You should be able to afford your own security. You've made enough money. Not that this is the discussion in the courts, but the courts are saying that they've upheld the decision because Harry is not only not part of the royal family now, but he will be afforded that protection if he gives due notice, or he is attending a state occasion, or he's coming to see his father, the king, or other members of the royal family. So I don't really see why he is challenging this so much, because the reality is, he's not really going to come to the UK very often. He might want to, but why should the British taxpayer pick up the cost when he's already earning an absolute fortune? And if he is going to come and be part of those family events, then he's going to get it anyway. So it does seem a fight that he is he's digging his heels in, and you know, you could argue that he's quite petulant, and he's not going to let it go.
So if he knew that in 6 months' time he was going to be coming over to visit Birmingham to check out Birmingham for the Invictus Games, he could have security if he gave them notice.
Well, the issue is he's going to give them notice. They will assess the threat that is prevalent at the time. And he is arguing that his private security need to have access to that kind of information that the Metropolitan Police or other security agencies have to assess threats to him. Now, I don't believe for a second that, well, that one shouldn't necessarily happen, because you can't have, let's say, celebrities like Taylor Swift, Elton John, accessing those sorts of databases that are paid for by the British taxpayer. Harry should have his own security firms, private security companies can assess these threats every day and every moment if they wanted to. So the issue is, if he, and he does know he's going to come back to the UK, he's already said it to the Good Morning America reporter, Will Reeve, just a couple of weeks ago, last week, saying that I've got trips to the UK planned, whether I'm coming back or I'm flying through to go to another place. So he knows his schedule. I mean, the Royal Family work a 6 month schedule pretty much. So barring, you know, the I think sort of a whistle stop tours coming over to see his father after cancer diagnosis, something like that, he does know his schedule. So again, is this being petulant? Is he fighting for his family's rights? Does he want to bring his wife and children over to spend some time with the royal family? Only Harry will know that. But I think it's all getting very convoluted, and I can't see how he would even win this case at the Court of Appeal.
Imagine partly we're down into like, it's the principle of the matter. I'm going to keep fighting this and just keep on going. But there were, I mean, there's some interesting things coming out, and I think there was one assessment about, you know, whether he was more at risk than Princess Diana. And then there was also discussion of the car chase in New York, which, you know, there was some debate about, like, how at the time about how serious that had been. And now the sort of suggestions that there's motivation for arresting a couple of, or potentially bringing charges against a couple of people. So others, there's sort of that level of, I don't know, what's the word, threat? Well, threat or risk, I guess.
It is.
There's a detail that's come out in that.
Well, certainly. I mean, it was widely criticised, weren't they, for going on record, their spokesman, and say that they were involved in a high-speed chase across New York. I mean, everyone who's ever been there or seen any image of New York, you could know that that's pretty unlikely. However, the investigators have said that there was enough evidence to have arrested two people for this sort of harassing behaviour. So Harry does have a point, but I think that whether this has a chance at the Court of Appeal, we'll see. But you've had, you know, the High Court now say that they've upheld the original decision, and it's hard to see where he goes from here. Again, the flip side is he's making an awful lot of money in his private ventures. You know, they can afford to spend $2 million a year on security, or however much the estimates have been made at. So, you know, is there a lot of sympathy while people are struggling to make ends meet at the moment with Harry? I'm not so sure.
So I think one thing that people have been talking about this week is the royals who are working royals but don't get security, or the, you know, the royals who are over here who don't get security, or certainly not the sort of the higher level. But part of the argument, I think, from Harry is that because he is in a relationship with a mixed race woman, and because his children are mixed race, that there is a greater threat to them because of that. And sadly, and there is an argument around that potentially.
Well, certainly. I mean, it does get very fractured, this argument. And I'm sure that Harry feels very, very aggrieved that his case has been thrown out. But there are other avenues that he can pursue. I mean, we have seen him. He has been the subject, both him and his wife, of Twitter trolls. There have been members of far-right to say communities there, but they're not communities. They're certainly just lunatics and potential terrorists who are threatening their very way of life. And I think that weighs heavy on Harry, and you can totally understand that. But I think there does need to be some accountability by saying, listen, you've made your decision. You have to try and stand on your own two feet in that sense. And it still comes back to the point that if he does come to the UK and he is seeing his family, they're not going to just leave him out in the cold. So I think that's the central point for me.
So, question of the week, listeners. I mean, obviously, if you should you be a police person or other security person who has added insight, then do let us know. But listeners, generally, you're welcome to have your tuppence worth on this. You know, how do you think Harry and the royal family, I guess, to a certain extent, and the police force as well, or the police service, how should they resolve this security question so that, well, it does feel like one of the barriers to Harry feeling, I don't know, confident or able or in the right to be able to come back to the UK a little bit more often. Right, Russell, I barely dare even ask you this. What's coming up in the next week?
Well, there's not a lot that we could talk about, to be honest. So there is a couple of things next week will be very interesting. Of course, we're seeing the king sporadically at the moment. Camilla and Princess Anne are definitely leading the fall. Worth mentioning, actually, Princess Anne met up with Rob Burrow, the former rugby league legend and inspirational MND campaigner. That was part of her role as patron of the Motor Neurone Disease Association. And we'd seen Prince William meet Rob Burrow and Kevin Sinfield recently, presenting them with their CBEs at Headingley, the home of Leeds Rhinos. And it was Anne's turn yesterday, and again, shining a spotlight on their incredible campaigning efforts. I think they've raised more than 15 million at the moment, and sort of increasing with their unbelievable feats of endurance. And so we congratulate them too as well.
Well, Russell, it's been lovely to catch up with you as ever, and we'll be back next week, listeners. You can get in touch with us on, particularly on Instagram at PodSave. If you're on the Twitter X thing, then get in touch with Russell over there at RJ Myers and follow all of his brilliant royal coverage. Make sure you're signed up for the newsletter as well. Head over to the Mirror website and you can find how to sign up to all of our newsletters, but particularly the royal one may be of interest to you. And until next time.
Pod save the king!